This is the Capital City Recap with Michael Cohen on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
This is 1320 WILS. Great to have you on this Wednesday, 86 now, getting down to 69 tonight. It's going to be another evening for the AC. Tomorrow, some sporadic thunderstorms, but high of 89, right back at it. Low of 64. Friday, pretty much the same story. A high of 88 on Friday. And that heat is going to continue right into the weekend. My next guest says that our country has been obsessed with gold. It's actually been a major factor in our entire history as a country. James Ledbetter is with us. He is the editor at Inc. Magazine, a financial writer there. And he's the author of the new book, One Nation Under Gold, How One Precious Metal Has Dominated the American Imagination for Four Centuries. James, great to have you on WILS.
Thanks for having me.
So four centuries of complete obsession. When did it really begin? When did we decide gold was going to be our fixation?
Well, it really starts, in a way, before the North American landmass was founded by Europeans. Remember that the people who were coming here thought they were taking a shortcut to India. Why India? Because, in part, there was gold there. There were all these myths about El Dorado and the rivers of gold. And to some degree, that starts to come true. You know, the Constitution mentions gold and silver as the source of value for currency. And you get a mini gold rush in the early 19th century when gold is discovered in North Carolina by a 12-year-old boy who is fishing with his sister on a Sunday afternoon. Stubs his toe against a 16-pound rock, takes it home, and uses it as a doorstop for 3 years. Then a jeweler comes by and recognizes that it's a chunk of gold, and suddenly you've got hundreds and thousands of people working mines in North Carolina and Georgia, and that money, that gold, supplies the Philadelphia Mint for the first half of the 19th century. So it really goes back to the very origins of our country, and I think that's indication of the fact that it's kind of in our DNA, it's in our psyche.
And so was there an understanding early on that there's likely a lot of gold physically in the ground in this country?
Well, I mean, it's not what was commonly understood in the 18th century. I mean, there were the explorers, but once they got here and they didn't find any gold, mm-hmm. It was commonly understood when the Constitution was framed that this was not going to be a place where there was a lot of gold. So the discoveries are really genuinely by accident. But once it happens, then you get these kind of gold rushes that create value, you know, out of nothing. I mean, the San Francisco gold rush that starts in 1848 almost immediately puts that city, once a tiny speck, on the map. The San Francisco Stock Exchange becomes, for a time, larger than the New York Stock Exchange, and it really puts the United States on the map globally. Remember, in the early part of this nation's history, we were often close to bankrupt former British colony, at war with War of 1812, the Mexican War, not very well respected and not very powerful in terms of the global economy until that moment. And I think for a lot of people, there's a kind of nostalgia about that time when we were the financial capital of the world because of the value coming out of the ground.
We're talking to James Ledbetter. The brand new book is One Nation Under Gold. And in terms of our monetary policy and the connection to gold, when did that really begin then?
So through the 19th century, there were all kinds of currencies. There was no natural legal tender money until the middle part of the 19th century. And up to that time, banks issued paper money, states issued paper money, people used foreign currencies, you know, whether it was pieces of eight from Spain or British pounds or Mexican pesos, you used whatever anybody would accept, and it was a kind of crazy quilt of different types of money, many of which were unreliable. The paper money in particular would often become worthless, you know, even weeks after it was printed. And so the movement to really ground dollar in gold and silver really takes force in the middle to late part of the 19th century, and then we go on a kind of pure gold standard at the end of the 19th century, the beginning of the 20th century.
Now, what was the effect of that when we were on that pure gold standard? What did that do for us?
Well, it was good and bad. I mean, on the one hand, you know, it certainly helped the country grow. Most of the economies, developed economies around the world, were also on a gold standard. So it was able to maintain, you know, periods of stable growth. But there were also tremendous consequences where we nearly would run out of gold. Because if you're backing your money up by gold, and if the dollar can be traded for gold, converted gold, you run a risk of running out. And that's really the situation that we found ourselves after World War II, when the country was on what was called the Bretton Woods standard.
Okay. Now, what was that standard then?
So after World War II, the kind of great powers of the world convened in Bretton Woods, New Hampshire, and came up with a system whereby the dollar was fully convertible to gold at the rate of $35 per ounce. So you had $35, you could go to the Treasury and say, I want an ounce of gold. If you had an ounce of gold, you go to the Treasury and say, I want $35. And every other currency was pegged to the dollar. Mm-hmm. This system worked pretty well. It arguably worked too well, in the sense that you have this tremendous growth in Western Europe and Japan starting in the late 40s through the 1950s, and they're getting all these dollars and dollar-backed securities, and there's so many out there that if they were all to be cashed for gold at the Treasury window at the same time, even though we had amassed the largest stockpile of gold in mankind's history, there wouldn't be enough. And policymakers and the Federal Reserve begin to realize this problem in the 50s.
So they were already printing more money than they had gold to back it even at that point?
That's right. Okay. That's right, because all these countries were growing. The global demand could not keep up with the global supply of gold.
So really, they essentially had gone off the standard completely at that point, even, you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, it eventually would collapse under its own weight when Richard Nixon took us off the gold standard in August of 1971.
Did that have to happen at that point?
It kind of had to happen. I mean, LBJ's advisors were seriously looking at it themselves. They just kind of thought that it might bring about the collapse of the Western world. And it was very disruptive when Nixon did this. I mean, it had some positive effects on the economy. If you remember the inflation and stagflation of the 1970s, some of that was due to the fact that the world was really shocked by the United States going off the gold standard. It's stabilized since then, although, as we saw in the Great Recession, it's not like the perfect system.
So why did it have to happen? What pushed that decision?
Well, there was a real risk of the United States running out of gold, number one. And number two, you would get these kind of attacks on the dollar. So one of the things that Nixon talked about when he took us off the gold standard was the international money markets would just target the dollar. And because the dollar had to be converted to gold, there were sort of very few things that the administration or the central banks could do to keep the value of the dollar. And it was really, really damaging to the United States economy.
So they were trying to drop the value of the dollars that they were doing?
It could go either way. You get these raids where kind of all of the global currency money would come in or out of a market. And it wasn't just the dollar. I mean, the Deutsche Mark had a very similar problem around the same time, and it also went to what we now have, which is a floating currency. So the dollar of the value today is not connected to any piece of metal, but rather what the market thinks it's worth.
Yeah, so were people actually going at that time to a bank somehow and demanding actual gold and getting it?
Yeah, I mean, in the 1960s, there were weeks when the run on gold was absolutely frightening. When the British devalued the pound in 1967, we had to bail them out by shipping out huge, like 200-ton shipments out of Fort Knox in the middle of the night in such a rush they didn't even weigh the stuff before they put it on a plane in order to bail out the British pound. I mean, this crazy system. I mean, the logic of the monetary system had broken down. It just took a few years before policymakers could figure out what to do about it.
Interesting. And they needed the physical gold because what people would have been rioting if they couldn't get it themselves. And
exactly.
Really?
That was the fear. You would have a kind of global collapse. And it almost happens in the spring of 68. There's so much pressure on the market that the gold market had to shut down. There was an emergency session of all the great economic powers at the Smithsonian in Washington, and they kind of hammered out an agreement. And eventually, they separated the private gold market from the public gold market, which was sort of a fix. It lasted for a few years until, as I said, Nixon decouples it finally in 71.
Talking to James Ledbetter, his brand new book is One Nation Under Gold, and you're listening to WILS. So where are we now? We hear a lot about gold and how really that's the only thing that we can count on nowadays. Where is our relationship with gold today?
So there is no longer any major economy in the world that values its currency, that equates its currency with gold. Central banks continue to hold a lot of it. There's still plenty of gold in Fort Knox. There's plenty of gold in the basement of the New York Federal Reserve. It has value. People are now able to invest in it. For 40 years in the middle part of the 20th century, it was illegal for Americans to own gold as an investment. And part of my book, One Nation Under Gold, explores that kind of political history of trying to restore that right.
Do you think we could end up in that position again?
I really don't, because again, the motivation for the Roosevelt administration to buy up all the privately held gold in 1933 and 1934 was to get control of the economy because the dollar was tied to gold. Today, because the dollar isn't tied to gold, there's no reason to do it. It wouldn't really accomplish anything. However, there are movements out there to try and restore the United States to a gold standard. And in both 2012 and 2016, the Republican presidential platform actually had a quiet little plank in it saying we would like to have a commission to study restoring a metallic standard for gold. Now, I don't really think this is going to happen.
What would that do if we actually pursued that seriously?
Well, I think it would be a disaster. I think it would be wildly impractical. I mean, among other questions, what would the value be? Like the dollar value of an ounce of gold today in the market, which is $1,200-something, would we do an average over the last 3 years? Would we take the GDP of the United States and divide it by all the gold that we hold to come up with some number? And you get wildly different estimates depending on what methodology you use. Nobody can agree on the methodology, and it kind of matters, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you bought gold today at $1,200 and the government came around tomorrow and said, guess what, the new price of gold is $400 an ounce, you'd be kind of angry. And there are millions of Americans that own gold. Plus, we could run into the same situation where if we price it wrong, other countries would then buy up all our gold and sell it somewhere else for a profit. So it really is a terribly impractical idea, but it has a certain appeal to, you know, millions of Americans who don't trust the current monetary system and who like the simplicity and the kind of psychological security that gold represents.
We've talked to gold analysts who say, look, that it's just a matter of time for the gold price explodes upwards, and governments are trying to hold the price down right now. They're manipulating the price of gold. Do you believe that?
To a degree, I do. I think there are people out there who are kind of fanatic on this subject, but they have a point that the central banks do intervene in the markets. They do, you know, they are wary of any kind of, you know, major shifts. But I think some of that too that you're hearing is also people who are trying to talk up the price of gold because they themselves invest in it. So you have to take a lot of this so-called analysis with a grain of salt. But it is true that, you know, there's a lot of secrecy around this. And one of the points that I make in the book is we don't even really know how many Americans own gold as an investment. There remains a kind of hush-hush aspect to gold ownership that I think leads some of these sometimes conspiratorial theories to block.
Well, it makes sense that if we have a history, the government came and took all our gold, you know, people are going to be a little nervous about.
It's true. But again, I think that sometimes those fears are manipulated for, you know, the personal gain of the people who are selling it to you.
James Ledbetter, his brand new book. You need to read this. You're going to learn a lot. The brand new book is One Nation Under Gold, How One Precious Metal Has Dominated the American Imagination for Four Centuries. It's James Ledbetter right here on WILS. James, it's been fascinating. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me, Mike. Take care.